Tech of Sports, episode 49, Troy Kirby. Tonight on the Tech of Sports, sports industry veteran Troy Kirby. It's June 5th, 2013. Netcast Studio mobile apps are a great way to receive our content for your smart devices. There's an app for both iOS and Android, and don't forget Stitcher Radio and the Stitcher Radio app for all iOS devices, Android and BlackBerry. Get Stitcher for free with your favorite Netcast Studio shows preloaded. And Stitcher Radio is an award-winning provider of news and talk radio. For your mobile phone and tablet, Stitcher, it's smart radio for your smartphone. And the Tech of Sports is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network at techpodcast.com. If it's tech, it's here. And the Tech of Sports is a production of Netcast Studio at netcaststudio.com. You can join us every Wednesday night at netcaststudio.com/live, where you can join the chat room, listen to the show live, and interact. Big welcome tonight to Troy. Troy has been around doing numerous things in the sports world, and it's just great to have him on here tonight. He's worked in three college athletic departments, Division II level and Division I FCS level. He's a very prolific revenue generator. He's helped generate over $5 million in revenue and ticket sales since 2006. He also has his own show and own podcast. It's the Tao of Sports. He started it in October 2012 as a way to promote idea shares with other college and pro sports people. He's a great source of information. He's very knowledgeable, and glad to have him tonight. He's the @SportsTao on Twitter. And Troy, good to see you. Good to have you on. Good to talk to you.
Well, thank you very much. Good to be here. Thank you for having me on.
Yeah, great to have you on. Enjoy your shows, the ones I've listened to, and love how you churn them out. Just really interesting. And I find anything with sports business and industry stuff like that just fascinating, because I'm kind of an outsider as a member of the media, and we're always looking for how things work internally, and you're just great at that. And I know you've been doing this a while. You've seen a lot. How much have things changed since you started out from where we are right now?
500%, because every single guest, that's what makes, I think, any show good. So hopefully I'm living up to standards for your show, but you know, it's the guests that make the show, because if they're not bringing it, then it's just you kind of evangelizing, and that doesn't work. So I look at like the guys like Brian DiTucci at, you know, the Oakland Athletics, Matt Harper, who was my first guest from Oregon Duck Ticks, Rob Sein, the VP of the Pac-12, Russ Stanley, who's been an innovator at the San Francisco Giants. He's the reason that everybody now has where you have dynamic pricing. He's the reason that StubHub exists the way it does, because he was the one that said, let's do it before anybody else. And everyone naysayed him. Those types of things, those types of people are the reason that that show works. Because if it were just me saying it, I don't think people would listen past episode 2.
And it's kind of funny. And you, to one extent, and me kind of along with what you do, we talk to people that usually aren't real sought after to be on radio shows and TV shows. So when these people are, when I approach some of these people, they kind of look at me like, you want to talk to me? And a lot of these people have great insight and great stories to tell. So they really enjoy coming on the show, and they're really good guests most of the time.
Oh, I agree. And I think part of it is you also have to have people that want to believe in you a little bit. Yep. So you have to sell yourself to begin with, because it's easy to think that people just automatically came to me and said, sure, I'll be on your show. A lot of them, they kind of didn't know what is a podcast. You know, I remember having to explain that. And there are a few people that, you know, I was like, wow, you're a no-brainer. And they just don't get it. And it's not their fault. You just have to continue to really kind of re-examine, let them understand. It's like a radio show on the internet or whatever it is. Because a lot of them also have the worry that you're just going to exploit them for whatever their name is, because it's in the industry, it's respected. And when they listen to a few shows and when they have a few examples, I think it helps allow them to realize you're not here to hurt them or exploit them. You're here to allow them to have an idea share. One of the people that he just didn't understand what I was doing, but he's like, okay, cool, I'll go on, was the VP of sales at Cleveland Cavaliers. His name was Nick Barlage. I just destroyed his name. But anyway, so Nick Barlage. And he went on, and then right after, it was like he had not only so much fun, but he also had several people tweet him back on his personal Twitter, which he was like, wow, I didn't even know it was that big of a deal. And suddenly he connected me to so many people, because he's like, he's telling other people, you have to do this. You have to be a part of it. And that's what is cool, is when you get those people that are really not just idea shares, but they almost become, you know, product evangelists themselves. And the thing is, you would be amazed, as Seth Godin says, at the amount of free content once you provide it, of the fact that people will necessarily, you know, help you, you know, you, once you give it away, people will be a part of it. And I think that's a good thing, because as long as your heart's in the right place and you're not there to, you know, just kind of sell people on something that's other than what, you know, you're intending, which is an idea share, et cetera, I think that once your heart's in the right place, it comes out well. It's a good thing.
I've had similar experiences, so I concur 100%. Let's talk about your day job for a minute here, and the work you do. Cal State Davis, a smaller Division I school. Talk about kind of the challenges that a person in your position faces, and tell the listeners a little bit about what you do in the school.
Well, I will correct you. It's a University of California Davis, not Cal State Davis. The reason why is there's two different systems.
Right.
I'm not ripping on anybody from a Cal State. It's just that we're the University of California Davis. We've earned that title. We're the third largest University of California school in the state. So we have about 30,000 students. So I think that's a good thing. But, you know, with my day job, it's with any job in athletics, it really is about, you know, understanding where you are in the system, understanding where you're going forward, that type of stuff. You know, I can say that my job at this place is different than my job at Seattle U or my job at Eastern Washington, but you have to just always bring it every single day. And I think that matters. As long as you're bringing your best effort and you're trying to stay within the top 30 to 35%, you're good. But, you know, from my job at Eastern Washington University, which was universally came into a system to where they had really not had a ticket manager the same at Seattle U, a lot of it is understanding who you are within the components of the system and moving forward and understanding how to sell ticket. And that means that you understand that it's a sales industry that sports is in, not anything else.
You're not going to take credit for that red field there, are you?
You know, I was part of it. I'm an alumnus of Eastern Washington University. And I will tell you, we had a lot of people that said, this will not work. You should not do it. And that's one of the things that I think that for anybody listening out there, innovation is messy. Anybody that thinks that innovation is easy, go look at the light bulb. Go look at the amount of things, the amount of times that people tried things that didn't work, but they learned from those mistakes and they learned from those things. So they're not really mistakes. And the red turf, to be honest with you, was a galvanizing force. We had more than enough people tell us that not only would they not support it, they'd pull funding, they'd do other things. You know, we did not have the best of support behind it until it got in. And the second it got in, everybody wanted to claim it. And that's what's funny about it, is it actually allowed Eastern Washington University to understand what its brand was, to understand to not take itself so seriously. We were FCS. Now, FCS, for those that, you know, are totally, you know, FBS minded and you think of the big schools, FCS is right under that. Now, it's not big boy football in a lot of ways. And I think that's where it gets a lot of, you know, consternation from people. But I have to tell you that, you know, the one thing that is cool about FCS is that once it doesn't take itself seriously, it becomes its own brand. It becomes like minor league baseball. You're there for
the experience. My next question, I was just going to compare it to. It's good football, and it's real. I like it because it's competitive football for the most part. And I was going to say, is it? I would compare it almost in sync with minor league baseball.
And that's the thing, is that's what we found at Eastern Washington University. If you go there, the scoreboard actually has a hand crank on it because it's sponsored by the local Native American Indian casino. And so anytime somebody scores, you know, the video board turns into a slot machine and we have the mascot do it. I mean, that was some of the big stuff. And, you know, I'm always proud of my work there, as well as the fact I'm an alumnus. And, you know, I remember what happened before we actually had the turf in and they were kind of laying it down, as we had so many people on the landing up by the parking lot who would watch it be installed and would say, this is not going to work, and then roll right down and, you know, buy season tickets. The person that I think really deserves a lot more credit than he gets, well, there's two people, Mark Hughes internally, who is the associate AD of advancement there. He's a former golf coach, understood how to connect people, was the one that got one of our alumnus who had never given anything to our athletic department before, which was Colin Cowherd, the ESPN personality, gave $50,000 to it because he believed not only in what, you know, the red turf stood for, but also the fact that somebody had come and understood. The other person was Michael Ruse. Now, he's a defensive lineman or offensive lineman, sorry, for the Tennessee Titans, one of the best there has been. And I remember him when he was a student there because I was a student there at the same time. And the one thing I always remember about Michael Ruse was that the build your own sandwich, he would go into Tawonka Hall, which is the big dining hall, and you could build your own sandwich for $5. And let me just say that he got one over on the house every single time.
I'm sure
the thing would load about that high. But Michael Ruse was a great visionary. And I told him at the FCS National Championship that year, the first year of the Red Turf, I said, you know, you're my best ticket seller. And, you know, you don't get anything except an attaboy for it. But he nodded and understood. And the thing is that when you're doing philanthropy for the right reasons, you have to do it to where it's a galvanizing thing that motivates people to move forward. And I know that this sounds like a non-tech question, but what I'll tell you is that moving forward with that type of stuff, it allows the social media aspect. It allows the, you know, really the stuff that goes on behind the scenes that everyone calls branding. It really allows that brand to find itself and to establish itself going forward. So I really do think that when you're looking at those types of things and you're looking at the Red Turf and everyone goes, I don't get it. You're talking about it. And let me ask you this. If the Red Turf had not happened, would you specifically have ever talked about Eastern Washington University?
Possibly. I wrote, actually, if you look at the back, I wrote one of the Yahoo Sports articles on the Red Turf when it was announced or coming in. And I don't think I criticized. I think I kind of took both sides of the issue and just wrote more of an informative piece on it. But I like the idea. And I would, if I was in the position of somebody that was, at the university that was hearing complaints about it, I would just say, go blame Boise State because they're the ones that started the trend. And Colin was probably hoping that his Eastern Washington would kind of become the next Boise State. He's forward thinking like that.
Well, not only that, but I mean, okay, Yahoo Sports. Why Yahoo Sports have ever written anything about Eastern Washington University?
The other editor would have laughed at me.
Would the New York Times, would the Wall Street Journal, would every other publication in the world, nobody could tell you where Eastern Washington University is, but I guarantee you that they can tell you right now that they have Red Turf. That branding aspect works. I'll always defend that decision. And by the way, 2 years later, I was rolling in to a place in Santa Barbara out of the way and just happened to wear an Eastern gear. And had the same experience that I had when I was in Atlanta the last time I was there in the airport walking through for a delay. And both times people go point to my Eastern Washington University logo and go, Red Turf.
Absolutely.
That's the difference. And that's where even technology has, you know, changed that, because a few years ago, Red Turf would never have been possible. And I think that everyone said, oh, it's going to turn pink. Everyone became a fashion designer suddenly and said the it would clash, it would do everything. And that's really where I want to get back to is, you know, just because people tell you that something won't work, whether that be a podcast, whether that be a video cast, et cetera, try it. Because even though it's messy, people don't even know what they want until after they've seen it a lot of times. You know, I had people that would tell me there's no reason to have a podcast on sports business. Why would anybody look at that? Why would anybody care? And now I have people, I get emails, I get Twitter things all the time about people sitting in their cars, driving to work, listening to it. You know, expanding kind of their thought process. No one else is doing it. Stetson University, there's University of, I think, Mississippi State, George Washington University, Georgetown are some of the schools that are actually, their sports business departments have told their students, listen to this. And I thought that was really cool because I never would have thought that anybody would have listened to it except, you know, a few people that I was friends with, but I thought it was kind of cool. And then after that, Matt Harper, who helped put out the first one with me as far as being a guinea pig and a guest, he said he got like 70 LinkedIn requests off of it. So I thought that was at least pretty powerful.
I agree. And try having a sports technology show. That's even, at least you have, you kind of have Darren Revell kind of as your champion for what you do. There's not really a sports technology person. Maybe I'm claiming that title, or a couple other people are. So it's interesting.
Don't speak too soon. That can happen.
Oh yeah.
And if you're ahead of everyone else, let them catch up with you.
I know.
And I would say that to anybody that's starting anything, just because, you know, that's one of the things with podcasts. I think I was having this conversation with Rob Watch, who's at Libsyn, which is the podcast company I go to, and You know, I think that one of the things that I would tell you is the worst thing for anybody is to look at your stats. Don't worry about your stats. Worry about your content. Worry about the idea that, you know, later on people in China will maybe catch up with you. People catch up to you when they catch up to you. And not everyone knows that you exist. It's like, you know, the best thing and the worst thing that ever happened to Twitter was they show how many followers you have. Yep. Because everyone obsesses on the amount of followers they have 10 minutes after they have a Twitter. But it takes a long time for people to understand and even see that you exist.
And unfortunately, Justin Bieber just passed the 40 million Twitter follower mark. So they got that going for him. I guess we're talking with Troy Kirby here, UC Davis. And let's talk about one other hot topic here before we go to our break. Social media is really hot right now. I'm sure you guys talk about it all the time. You're looking for ways to maximize the use of it and all that type of thing. As part of your job now and the people that work with you to be social media experts?
Well, I mean, I want to separate the two things because, you know, my UC Davis work, while it's good, I'm the ticket operations director, right, and they have those things there. I can only speak to, you know, the Dow of sports, which, you know, is really, you know, where I have to kind of come from. I guess what I'll say is that, you know, you brand yourself on social media. And if you brand it separately, as long as you're consistent, as long as you understand your personal brand, that's where you're going to, you know, see things work. And, you know, I think it's really going to move, you know, yourself forward to honestly look at your personal brand every single time, start out with a plan, a goal, and provide the right information. Because if, you know, I mean, with my podcast, if you go in once per week, you know, 2 to 3 times per week, it's always about, you know, making sure that you're putting out good content that's consistent. You don't hear me cuss on that. You don't hear me, you know, tell jokes, et cetera, because it's not a comedy podcast. It's not a podcast where anything goes. It's a podcast of representing business and sports and that type of setting where somebody might consider it for personal development. Now, I'm not cutting on anybody that wants to do those things at, you know, the other level. You know, if you want to have a comedy podcast like Joe Rogan's, go right ahead. But understand what your brand is, even if, you know, I know that that gets kind of a nasty word sometimes, but I definitely think that, you know, that's kind of where, you know, kind of the rubber meets the road is you have to, yeah, your listeners have to know who you are.
Yeah. And you want them to believe in you and you want to kind of set yourself as an expert or the kind of the authority. And that's how you establish the credibility, I would think.
You know, you don't have to tell everyone you're an authority. I think that's something that's lost. You just have to be consistent on who you are. And if people want to decide that you're an authority, that's what they'll decide. Right. Yeah. I tell people all the time, I don't know it all. That's why I ask other people. That's why, you know, I always want to know what other people think. Because if I was an expert at everything, well, I'd be a genius and I'd have $1 billion. I'd probably have 5 billion by this time or 10 billion or whatever. I don't. So I can't obviously know everything. You know, I mean, still balancing a checkbook sometimes is a mastery art. But, you know, that's why you have other people there to ask advice from.
It's called creative accounting, Troy. And
I'm not part of Arthur Anderson. So.
A good CPA will teach you a lesson than that. I don't know if that's good or bad. But
But, you know, just because you save $15 doesn't mean it can't get you 20 in life, you know, so I'd rather avoid, you know, any kind of cheating on the taxes or creative accounting. So
I didn't go to Starbucks today, so I saved $15. So
there you go.
Let's take a quick break here for Amazon.com, our sponsor. And if you're doing any shopping on Amazon in the coming months, Father's Day right around the corner, weddings this summer, you can go to netcaststudio.com/Amazon for all your needs. No extra cost to you. Help support Netcast Studio and the shows that the network brings to people. So real easy to do, and everything's available on Amazon. You can go to netcaststudio.com/Amazon. And we kind of talked about it briefly there, Troy, but the people that work behind the scenes in sports, how they're kind of the hardest working people that, you know, may not realize a big monetary gain right now for it. But in sports, I always tell people you kind of have to pay your dues like in no other industry to kind of break through. And is that what you've kind of found out? And you get people asking you about that?
First thing I would tell you is that if you're not looking at an internship, you're looking in the wrong industry. The second thing is do not consider yourself a paid spectator. If you're not trying to work in the top 30%, you know, top 25% of your industry, then you're failing. I will tell you that how I got my first job in sports was a connection. Connections get you hired, and not having connections get you fired. But beyond that, it was the fact that I was willing to sell. I know a lot of people think that they would love sports because they want to watch the basketball players play up close. This is a sales industry. I know there's operations involved. I know, you know, some people want to talk about that, but you know, those types of jobs, even the marketing jobs, they're all about sales. Sales is in operations. You have to make sure that everything flows or whatever, you know, there's no problems or there's minimal problems, but you have to make sure that you realize you're in sales. And I definitely think that that is something that a lot of people don't want to admit to, or they think because they'll work harder than everybody else, that'll separate them. That'll not separate you. It's the fact of proving it. You know, we have a problem in this country of a lot of people talking and a lot less doing. You know, you're a doer. You're doing this podcast. You're doing, whether it be audio, video, whatever. I'm doing a podcast. I'm, you know, doing my regular day job. I'm doing other things. I don't think a lot of people, you know, really, they'll put a lot of lip service in, but in the end, they won't do. And I think that I love the game. I'll go get a master's degree so I can skip ahead. Master's degree doesn't do much for you except for what you're willing to put into it. I have a master's degree. I love the education side, but at the same time, that is not what helped me get a job. If you want to get a job in sports, you better learn to sell and sell a lot.
Yeah, I mean, every business, whether you own a business or work for business, I mean, I always tell people that, you know, the best representatives or the best salespeople for your business are sometimes the people that don't have that sales title to their job. I mean, they're representing the business every day and indirectly, or sometimes directly, they're selling that business or selling that product. So I think that's important for people to keep in mind, and people that are in administration at universities, I think maybe sometimes they're to blame for that. They kind of set labels. And job descriptions are one thing, but ultimately the people that work for universities, and a lot, this is really at big universities I've encountered, they kind of lose that train of thought and that message somewhere.
Well, but I mean, at the same time, college athletics has not really had to broach sales until the last few years when their budgets didn't balance. That's an issue that is systemic of an organization that existed when budgets balanced, but it'll correct itself. In that sense, as it's correcting itself, it's finding third party solutions or other solutions in order to ensure that it maximizes the money it makes. And, you know, in the end of it, the students have, you know, put forward a lot of money for, you know, people to do the things they do, which are to have, a student funded athletic department. But on those shortfalls, that's where ticket sales comes in. And before, you know, when you'd go to a college game, even the largest, a lot of times they gave away a lot of tickets. A lot of times they gave away a lot of marketing dollars, and they just put up a sign and they didn't worry about activation. So some of this is them kind of, you know, understanding you got to actually sit on the horse to ride it, because before it used to be okay to walk the horse to water. Now you got to really steer the thing. And I think that matters, because a lot of them really hadn't had to do that before, but they're catching up pretty fast.
So are you using technology to kind of drive ticket sales a little bit? What specific, when it comes to technology, what have you guys implemented either for the game day experience or maybe for the selling experience? What have you guys done in the last couple of years technology-wise?
Well, you know, as I said, I can't speak for, you know, what we do at UC Davis or whatever, because that's, you know, kind of their deal. I can only represent, you know, SportsTow in that. But I'll tell you is what I've learned from other, you know, organizations coming forward is, you know, really the share part of it is that you're learning that essentially a lot of them are just getting on board with the CRM. A lot of them are getting on board with, you know, really understanding outbound ticket sales and understanding proactive ticket sales. And I think that matters, because, you know, before they were waiting for people to come to them. And I don't think you can rely just on social, you know, but I also don't think that you can ignore it. It comes rather, you know, from the idea that would you buy something just based off the idea that somehow, you know, somebody sent you a message? Or if somebody got in touch with you in a personal touch, and you developed a relationship, you're more likely to buy. And especially if you need to be convinced to buy. I mean, we're ahead of Europe in that sense. I mean, when I've talked to people, you know, from Europe, they're still trying to get proactive ticket sales, but you know, some places it doesn't work. You know, Australia talks about, you know, telemarketing, you know, they call it telemarketing. Well, you know, it doesn't work for them. So they're totally mobile. Whereas in Europe and especially the UK, really not so much.
We just have a lot, there's a lot more entertainment, many more entertainment options here in the States. So you guys are kind of fighting for everybody's interest and everybody's business. So that's why I think it's crucial not to leave any stone unturned probably.
Yeah. Not, you know, and I think that, you know, that's something that both the markets are understanding. If you're looking at whether it be, you know, ticket sales or marketing and branding in general, I mean, you're seeing that there, some of them are trying to figure it out, but that's collective. And I don't think that that's, you know, off to one side of it. It's, and I think that, you know, third party ticket sales has started to go, you know, pretty huge to where, yep. All of a sudden, the IMG Learfields, the Aspire Group, the Collegiate Consulting, the Get Real Sports, the PMI College, all of those, and even the corporate side of it, whether it's Learfield or it's, you know, Peak Sports Marketing or, you know, KP Sports that are working with some of the smaller schools, they're all starting to sell corporate sponsorship. They're starting to do that activation because, you know, a lot of these structures were not set up initially to do it. So, and their budgets have never shown that. So, you know, it's a little different, but they're quick learners. Let's just say that.
They have to be in this day and age.
Yep.
Back to your podcast real quick, Troy, as we're talking with Troy Kirby here, you mentioned some of the feedback you get from, you've gotten from maybe college professors or university students that have listened to it and enjoy it. And what about just anything real unusual, someone maybe that you got feedback from that you wouldn't have expected or something that came out of the clear blue that that's led to something good because someone enjoyed or it was a regular listener of your podcast. I have lots of stories like that. What have you heard back from people? Something that surprised you?
You know, getting tweets from Bill Sutton were great. You know, the fact that I was able to interview Lee Steinberg, I didn't expect that. I was thinking about that actually when I went on vacation to spring training, and I just set up a few, and they just kept compounding to where every single day at spring training in Arizona for a week, all I was doing was podcast where I had like five a day, six a day. And I was like, I met tons of people, you know, that was amazing. I was planning on paying for tickets, but everyone seemed to have tickets. I met the entire sales staff of the, you know, Phoenix Coyotes. I met their marketing director. I met all, you know, different spring training people. I talked to, you know, one amazing guy was Joe Windham, who works for he's the president of the Phoenix, Arizona Rattlers, the Arena Football League team. I mean, there were just tons of people that I met that I thought I never would have met these people. And now I've developed a relationship with them. Even if I was in sports, it was still isolating because, you know, you really have to develop a relationship. You develop a rapport. And that's the thing when you're moving back and forth with, you know, somebody from, you know, for 45, 30 minutes, whatever, you know, an intimate setting like this where you're interviewing or talking in general, it's all about learning who they are and understanding them.
Absolutely. Sports is the ultimate relationship business. So that's, if anyone can take one thing away from this, that's something great to know. And Troy, how can listeners hear your podcast, see what you're up to as far as Sports Tao and get in touch with you if they have any questions?
SportsDAO.com is one of them. I'm on iTunes. You can get that. I have a free iPhone app as well on SportsDAO. And you can find me on Twitter. Great stuff. So, you know, I hope we intermingle with the tech of sports and the DAO of sports. But, you know, hopefully I can get you on my show pretty soon.
Absolutely. Anytime. I always ask all, as we wrap up, I always ask all my guests one last question. What's the one gadget or piece of tech that you can't live without in this day and age?
Okay. That is easy. That is the Zoom H4N. If you do not have a Zoom, but you are looking to do a podcast, I originally did mine off of an iPad with an USB mixer and plugins and all this stuff. The Zoom is the best piece of equipment you can own. it is probably about $250.
Yep.
And I'll tell you that if you do not own one, but you are looking at doing a podcast, that has it all. It allows you to use Shure mics. It allows you to, you know, it runs on two portable batteries, you know, and to be honest with you, it fits in a backpack. I actually found a little backpack at a Walmart for like $5 that a 7-year-old would probably use, and everything I need that fit in there. So it was easy to travel with and everything else. And it uses an SD card, so it's not even tape. Beautiful piece of equipment. You can't go wrong with that.
It almost makes you feel like you're cheating a little bit.
Exactly. And it comes it comes out on two different channels. You have the ability for 4 channels. I mean, I could go on, but you know, when you're cutting that up, and I always cut my stuff up in Audacity, and then after a while do it, you know, at GarageBand, it works. It's great.
Yeah, that's a great information for people that are looking to get into podcasts, and that's a great place to start. Troy, a lot of great information. Appreciate having you on, and hope to talk further in the near future.
Okay, thank you very much for having me on, and have a good day.
Sure, and people can check out netcaststudio.com for all the links regarding Troy and the Sports DAO. And I just want to let everyone know that Netcast Studio has a bunch of other shows which may be of interest to you. You can head over to netcaststudio.com, check out all those shows that are available for download, for streaming, listening, embedding, all that type of thing. And Two Thumbs Up Media, it's the new podcast directory that's been launched here by Netcast Studio. You can search and find podcasts very easily. That's doing really well. A lot of benefits to that directory. This has been the Tech of Sports, a Netcast Studio production.